At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to The Coca-Cola Company's December 2014 modeling call. Today's call is being recorded. If you have objections, please disconnect at this time. All participants will be in a listen-only mode until the formal question and answer portion of the call. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. To withdraw your question, press star 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before asking your question. Participants will be announced by their name and company. I would like to remind everyone that the purpose of this conference is to talk with investors, and therefore questions from the media will not be addressed. Media participants should contact Coca-Cola's Media Relations Department if they have questions. I would now like to introduce Tim Leveridge, Vice President and Investor Relations Officer. Mr. Leveridge, you may begin.
Good afternoon, and thank you for being with us. Today I'm joined by Kathy Waller, our Chief Financial Officer. Before we begin, I would like to inform you that you can find supplemental materials on our website that support the prepared remarks by Kathy this afternoon. In addition, this conference call contains forward-looking statements, including statements concerning long-term earnings objectives, and should be considered in conjunction with cautionary statements contained in our earnings release and in the company's most recent periodic SEC report. I would also like to note that we have posted schedules under the Financial Reports and Information tab in the Investor section of our company website at www.coca-colacompany.com. These schedules reconcile certain non-GAAP financial measures, which may be referred to by Kathy during this afternoon's discussion, to our results as reported under generally accepted accounting principles. Please look on our website for this information. Following prepared remarks by Kathy this afternoon, Kathy and I will turn the call over to your questions. Now I'd like to turn the call over to Kathy.
Thank you, Tim, and good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'm going to start with a brief review of our 2014 performance and outlook for the fourth quarter and full year. I'll then address a few broader strategic topics that are top of mind for most of our investors, and specifically how we see those items impacting our results for 2015 and how that rolls up into our broader 2015 outlook. Given the time we have and the topics to cover, I do not intend to cover a detailed outlook on the business environment by operating group. The goal today is to help you model our business into next year, given that there are several puts and takes. As always, we will leverage our fourth quarter call in February to provide more context by group. Before we end, I'll walk you through the scorecard we will use to review our performance with you during 2015. Starting with 2014 performance and outlook, 2014 has been a challenging year for the industry, given the tough macro environment and continued currency headwinds. These factors have driven a deceleration in personal consumption expenditures, and as a result, the non-alcoholic beverage industry has grown 1 to 2 points slower than our initial forecast at the beginning of the year. And this has led to September year-to-date comparable currency-neutral net revenue growth of 2% with operating income growth of 5%. Turning to the remainder of the year, as you can see on slide 6, our outlook for the fourth quarter and full year remains consistent with what we communicated during last quarter's earnings call. I won't reiterate the outlook for each line item, but I'd like to point to just a couple of items for the sake of clarity and to note the implications for our top and bottom line results. First, we do not expect unit case volume growth to improve versus the third quarter. Second, for the full year, we continue to expect operating leverage to be flat to slightly positive on a currency neutral basis. That means that for the fourth quarter, we expect currency neutral operating leverage to be negative low single digits, due in part to the incremental media investments this year and the timing of expenses last year that we are cycling. And we expect full-year comparable currency-neutral EPS growth of 4 to 5% with a currency headwind of 7%. Now, this would imply our fourth quarter comparable currency-neutral EPS growth to be flat to slightly positive with a currency headwind of 9%. Given the current operating environment, we recognize we need to move quickly to address these challenges, and we are taking actions to return our business's top and bottom line growth trajectory to our expectations. During last quarter's call, we outlined 5 strategic actions our company is undertaking to reinvigorate growth. And we are already making progress in each of these areas. First, we announced the streamlining of group functional layers, the standardization of business units, and the formation of a single Western Europe business unit. These actions will speed decision-making and enhance our local market focus to drive growth. Second, we identified an additional $2 billion in annualized savings by 2019, something I will speak more about in a few minutes. Third, we continue to move forward with the North America refranchising efforts, with approximately 5% of the annualized volume transferred in 2014, and we expect to double this rate in 2015. We are also moving to unlock growth in key emerging markets through transformative changes to our bottling landscape. We recently announced both a proposed investment in Coca-Cola Indonesia and a merger to form Coca-Cola Beverages Africa. These efforts will help ensure our system is positioned to capture significant growth in these large, high-growth emerging markets for the coming decades. In the case of Africa, it also allows us to focus on our core business model as we transfer our Canners, Valpre, and Shanduka businesses to the new bottling entity. Fourth, earlier this year, we created incremental value with a strategic investment in Keurig Green Mountain and intend to further do so with our pending investment in Monster Beverage Corporation, which underscored not only our ability to adapt to changing consumer trends, but also our commitment to further innovation. And finally, we are driving revenue through improved pricing in North America and will further focus our business on revenue and profit growth through revising our incentive metrics to include revenue and to provide a clear line of sight between our employees around the globe and the metrics they can best influence. While we still have much to do, we are confident that the actions we have outlined will drive long-term growth. We will spend the rest of the time addressing how these items impact our 2015 outlook, beginning with productivity. The first phase of our productivity program started last year, which culminated in the original $1 billion target. The intent of that plan was to fund an incremental $1 billion step-up in media investments to fully fund our brands and accelerate growth. Earlier this year, when we recognized that the macro environment was not likely to improve for many of our markets, we started working to identify opportunities to accelerate growth and reduce costs to enable us to deliver against our financial commitments, even with a tough macroeconomic environment. As part of that process, we leveraged expertise inside and outside the company to provide perspective on the challenges and the opportunities and to provide perspective on the process to achieve the opportunities. But given the magnitude of cultural change required, our leaders are taking ownership of the various work streams to ensure success. We have a project management office, which reports to a steering committee, which is comprised of our senior leadership team. We analyze the cost savings opportunity in line with the business models in which we operate. Our savings will come from 3 groups of costs. First is cost of goods sold. So our cost of goods sold basis is $18 billion, and approximately half of our productivity will come from this base, which represents an 8% targeted reduction. An 8% targeted reduction is significant when put against a cost base that is reflective of overall gross margins greater than 60%, with the concentrate side of our business significantly higher than 60%. Examples of opportunities that we identified include inline blowing, further plant automation, further lightweighting of our packages, and optimizing our production network and procurement. Our $12 billion base of operating expenses within SG&A consists of 2 components. The first component would be the corporate center, Coca-Cola International, and Coca-Cola North America, and that's excluding any bottler-related expenses. The 15 to 20% reduction is a substantial reduction of that cost base. And the second component is bottler-related operating expenses. The mid-single-digit reduction is a smaller percentage, but that makes sense when you think about the underlying businesses. Our bottling investment group business consists primarily of emerging market bottlers where there is significant growth potential, like China and India, as well as our German bottler, whose integration and cost savings initiatives have been significant and are continuing. So there's not as much additional opportunity within the bottling investments operating expenses. In addition, our productivity plan does not include any potential savings from our North America territories that will be refranchised by 2017. If we exclude the roughly $2 billion in OPEX associated with these territories, the savings as a percent of the addressable spend base would increase. The final group of expenses is our $5 to $6 billion marketing cost base, where about $600 million would be saved as we focus on spend on scaled, efficient global campaigns and implement procurement savings protocols. So consistent with our original plan, $800 million to $1 billion of cost savings are currently earmarked for increases in media investments. The incremental $2 billion we announced will be used to fund media investments if we deem additional spending as prudent. It will also fund innovation, and importantly, it will provide financial flexibility to deliver against our financial commitments in the near term. For 2015, we expect to realize gross productivity of at least $500 million and intend to reinvest approximately $250 million to $350 million in incremental media investments. As we will discuss later, we also expect that productivity will help to offset anticipated net increases in certain costs, such as higher pension expense and the cycling of certain performance incentive reversals. But to be clear, this is currently reflected in our guidance for 2015. So turning now to next year, before we delve into a couple of larger structural items, I'd like to take a moment to put all of the moving pieces into context. We'll talk about the North America refranchising and Monster transactions in detail as they are more complicated and will take a little more time to understand. But big picture, we expect a headwind on both revenues and EPS from the North America refranchising and a tailwind to both metrics from the Monster transaction. Please note this is before any consideration from financing activities. There are other structural impacts we expect in 2015 that we will not cover in detail, as they are relatively straightforward. So as we referenced in our third quarter call in North America, we will continue to have a structural impact from changes to our process of buying and selling recyclable materials, which impacts the top line, but not profitability. And we expect a net neutral impact to revenues and EPS from the various bottling transactions outside of North America that either occurred in 2014 or are expected to close in 2015. Taken together, the net impact on a consolidated basis is expected to be slightly positive on net revenue and a slight headwind at EPS. However, it is important to note that these impacts are based on our current assumptions on the timing of the closing and transitions of the territories, so the final impact may be different. Turning now to our refranchising efforts in North America, some of these slides may be familiar to those who heard Sandy speak last month at an investor conference. These slides are also available on our website. However, given the importance of this topic, I'd like to provide a little more detail around the economics of refranchising and the estimated 2015 P&L impacts. Broadly speaking, we have four primary objectives for the new beverage partnership model, and we have made significant progress around each of those objectives. First, we needed new agreements that support the evolving operating model while creating more rational and contiguous operating territories. The new agreements align our interests and strike an appropriate balance between national scale and local market execution. Second, it was critical that we establish a national account team to drive better decision-making and commercial execution with national accounts. Third, we needed to establish an efficient and competitively advantaged national product supply system that operates under a single governance structure. And lastly, we needed to have an improved and integrated information technology platform, all of which we strongly believe will set us up for growth for the long term in North America. If we look at the general structure of the refranchising agreements, we expect the vast majority of them to fall under a sub-bottling arrangement instead of an outright purchase. Under these agreements, we expect to receive quarterly payments for these territory rights. Under current accounting rules, a portion of these future payments will impact net revenue, and the rest will be recognized as interest income. Importantly, these payments are variable and tied to the bottler's future gross profit in these territories, ensuring that we will be aligned in growing the value of these territories along with our bottlers. Just to be clear, the quarterly payments are for the territory distribution rights and are separate from the ongoing revenue we generate from selling concentrate and or finished products to these bottling partners. Lastly, an important element of the agreements requires the bottlers to continue purchasing finished products from CCR to service these territories. This ensures that our continued implementation of a competitively advantaged national product supply system is not disrupted. During the last earnings call, we said that we have a clear line of sight on a plan to refranchise the majority of our company-owned bottling territories by the end of 2017. When we think about refranchising a little more than half of our U.S. bottle can business by 2017, there are obviously significant balance sheet implications. It is easiest to think about three primary components: the distribution assets, the distribution rights, and the cross-licensed brands. We will receive cash upon closing for the distribution assets and the cross-licensed brands. And as I discussed previously, we will receive future quarterly payments from the bottlers for the distribution rights. At the end of 2017, CCR will still have about a third of the total bottle can volume in the U.S. Our intent is to ensure the remaining territories are refranchised at latest by 2020. And we expect the speed at which territories are refranchised to start accelerating. However, phasing shown on slide 18 is based on annualized volume in the territory. The actual volume and financial impact for any given year will obviously be dependent on the timing of closing. Now, as we think about modeling the P&L impacts for 2015, we have provided our current best estimate of actual volume to be transferred in 2015 based on current expectations of timing. We currently expect the volume associated with the structural impact in 2015 to be approximately 200 million unit cases. When trying to understand the impact to our P&L from refranchising, I think it's helpful to look at the rough per-case economics. For the purposes of this discussion, I will use the midpoint of the ranges provided on slide 19. So using those midpoints, the structural impact to our revenues of roughly $2 per case effectively represents the gross profit associated with the distribution of product. Since we will maintain production of finished goods and there is no change to our cost structure, the impact to our gross profit is the same as the impact to our net revenues. The initial impact of PBT will be roughly 50 cents per case, net of the ongoing sub-bottling payments we will receive in perpetuity for the distribution rights. Immediately post-transfer, our company will retain certain fixed costs that will take some time to either transfer to our distribution partners or eliminate as we right-size the supporting cost structure. We estimate an additional 25 cents per unit case of these residual costs will be eliminated in the 12 to 36 months following the territory transfer. So the initial EPS impact for refranchised territories will be larger than the low single-digit impact expected at the end state due to these temporarily retained costs. We will continue to look for additional opportunities to accelerate our refranchising efforts. If we are able to, this would mean more revenue and profit would be divested in 2015, leading to a greater dilutive impact on EPS. If we step back from the initial impact from the refranchising, we see several benefits that will accrue to cash flows through the process. It will increase our consolidated operating margins and at the same time reduce our capital base, thereby boosting our overall return on invested capital for the company. And the final area I would like to cover is the proposed Monster transaction, which also has a few moving parts. We currently anticipate closing at the end of the first quarter. As a reminder of details of the transaction, our system will pick up the remaining half of the distribution for Monster in the U.S. that we currently don't have, which represents approximately $750 to $800 million in revenue for CCR in 2015. When all territories are transferred, we will add approximately 50 million incremental cases in 2015. We are swapping our global energy brand portfolio for Monster's non-energy brand portfolio in the U.S. The impact of brand swaps on net revenue is expected to be neutral, as concentrate revenue on KO's legacy energy brands will be mostly offset by finished goods revenue on Monster's non-energy brands. Gross profit will be negatively impacted, despite the structural benefit at net revenue, primarily due to the loss of concentrate profit on KO's legacy energy brands. The slight negative impact at gross profit becomes a slight benefit at PBT due primarily to the equity income recorded on our investment. As we move forward with refranchising our North America territories, we anticipate that Monster will be included, and thus the associated distribution revenue and profit will also transfer with the territories over time. And we intend to recoup the value of the distribution rights during refranchising. Now that we've had a chance to review a couple of key impacts, I'd like to shift into our specific outlook for next year. As we look ahead to 2015, we anticipate continued challenging macroeconomic conditions in most developed markets as well as some key emerging markets. While we anticipate a small increase in commodity costs, this should be roughly offset by productivity, leading to comparable currency-neutral gross margins roughly in line with 2014. Before the impact of structural items. We expect structural items to be a slight benefit to net revenues, but a 1 to 2 point drag on gross profit growth at an approximate 1 point drag on operating income growth. After taking into consideration the incremental equity income we will receive from our investment in Monster Beverages, Coca-Cola Indonesia, and Coca-Cola Beverages Africa, this would result in a slight negative impact to PBT. We will start implementing changes to create our new operating model in the beginning of 2015, but margin enhancements will take time to fully materialize. We will continue to reinvest in incremental media investments and expect to recognize higher pension expense in 2015. In addition, we will cycle reversal of expenses related to certain incentive plans in 2014. Further, we expect net interest income to flip to net interest expense next year, and the differential with this year's net interest income should equate to about a 2-penny headwind on EPS. Our underlying effective tax rate is expected to remain at 22.5% for 2015. And finally, we expect approximately $2 to $3 billion in net share repurchases for 2015. Therefore, we do not expect our comparable currency neutral EPS growth in 2015 to differ significantly from our growth rate this year. After considering our hedge positions, current spot rates, and the cycling of our prior year rates, we now expect an approximate 3-point currency headwind on net revenue with a 5 to 6-point headwind on profit before tax for the full year 2015. There are a couple of phasing items you should consider when modeling the first quarter. We expect to see improving performance as we move through the year, given the cycling from 2014, the benefit of the incremental investments flowing in over time, and slightly improving macro trends as we move into the back half of next year. Due to our fiscal calendar, there are 6 additional selling days in the first quarter of 2015 as compared to the first quarter of 2014. Although that will benefit revenue, given the sales curve, many of the associated costs will also move into the first quarter as well. While the North American territories refranchised in 2014 will impact the first quarter of 2015, the vast majority of territories to be transferred in 2015 will begin in the second quarter. We currently anticipate closing the transaction with Monster Beverage Corporation at the end of the first quarter, and we currently expect currency will be a 7% headwind to PBT in the first quarter. As we move through 2015, we will track our performance and report the progress we are making on a quarterly basis. As you can see on slide 26, we will report on a set of metrics as well as provide an update on the progress we are making against our strategic actions. We look forward to sharing more with you on our earnings call in February. Before we close out the prepared remarks, I would like to take a moment to cover the long-term opportunity we see for our industry and for our company. We remain confident in the growth potential for non-alcoholic beverages. While growth rates will be challenging in the short term given the macroeconomic volatility, we believe that over time, consumer trends will support mid-single-digit revenue growth. As a reminder, our currency-neutral long-term targets are mid-single-digit revenue growth, 6-8% PBT growth, and high single-digit EPS growth. Further, we absolutely believe that the Coca-Cola Company is best positioned to capture growth in non-alcoholic beverages and continue to deliver long-term value to our shareholders. Our system services 23 million outlets across more than 200 markets worldwide. We have $17 billion brands with more to come. We hold the top leadership position in NARTD beverages, sparkling beverages, and still beverages. This, coupled with the strategic actions we have outlined and on which we are already progressing, give us the confidence that we will achieve our targets over the long term. So in summary, the macro environment remains challenging in key markets across the globe. We have already taken significant steps against our five strategic actions to regain our momentum. Results will take time to gain traction as we implement significant change in our company next year and reinvest in our business. We will emerge stronger, and we will be well positioned to take advantage of extremely attractive long-term fundamentals driving our industry. And as we move forward, we will track and report out on our progress. Tim and I will now open up the call for your questions. Operator, we are now ready for our first question.
Thank you. And now we'll begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. To remove your request, you may press star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. Our first question will come from John Fauché with J.P. Morgan. Your line is now open.
Thanks. And, Kathy, thanks for doing this. This is very helpful. Wanted to ask one specific question about Q4, which is the negative leverage between the currency impact on profit before tax and EPS. Can you sort of explain that in terms of how that's working? Does that continue into 2015? And then the second piece I want to talk about was a little more phasing discussion, which is the sort of increase in the spending, and you talked about the sales curve, versus the increase in the productivity over the course of 2015. So as we map out the operating leverage, I assume the spending probably hits more equally and the productivity is a little more back-end loaded. Is that the right way to look at it? Thanks.
Yeah. Hey, John, just one quick question on the clarification on your negative leverage between O. Are you talking about currency specifically? Meaning the differential between the OI currency impact and the EPS currency impact?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm asking.
Yeah. So that impact basically is the remeasurement gains and losses that we record in other income and net. So, you know, when we remeasure basically the income statements, the P&Ls from around the world, that remeasurement gain and loss gets recorded at that line item, and that's basically all that you're seeing there.
Okay, so we don't need to factor that negative leverage in from profit before tax to EPS in 2015 at this point.
Well, if the just to clarify, John, for the 2015, we gave currency outlook at the PBT
line,
so it would have already that would have factored it in.
Yeah, we said negative 5-6% at PBT, and that does factor in anything below operating income. So that would have captured anything on that remeasurement gain or loss.
Okay, and that remeasurement gain or loss is the difference between the 6-7 point headwind on. Okay, so that's an operating income number.
Yeah.
Okay, I see. Okay, so that the 6-7 is not a PBT FX guidance number. That's a pure operating income guidance number.
Yes.
Okay, got it. And then the phasing of the spending versus the productivity for 2015, roughly.
Yeah, so you know, as we are working to get the productivity, I think back-end loaded would be the appropriate way to think about that, John.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our next question will come from Bryan Spillane with Bank of America. Your line is now open.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you. I guess just two questions. The first just related to 2015. I just wanted to make sure I captured, once we factor in the currency neutral growth, the things that are headwinds are operating profit, FX on pre-tax profit is going to be a 5-6% headwind. There's an incremental 2 or 3 cents from the unfavorable swing in interest expense. And then I guess in terms of the underlying tax rate, is that also going to be a slight, that should be basically neutral year to year. So that sort of gets us to, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of about 14 cents or so worth of sort of headwinds off of the currency neutral growth. Is that right, or am I missing something?
No, I think that's about right. The interest expense is a 2 to 3 cents, is a 2 cents headwind, and the tax rate is neutral. So that's at 22.5. So in both years. So yeah, I think that's about right. The 14 cents headwind off.
Okay.
Brian, just to clarify, are you talking the 14 cent headwind is the FX impact?
Or just know the total number of, you know, if I'm just looking purely at an EPS level, if I grow next year currency neutral by, you know, 4 or 5%, and then I start backing off the effect on FX, the effect on of the unfavorable swing of interest expense, I'm somewhere in that 14 to 15 cent range of headwinds off of whatever I grow currency neutral.
Yeah, it's in that ballpark. With the FX being in the ballpark of, you know, 12-13 cents
yeah.
or so, and then the interest being 2 cents, it's in that ballpark, John. Brian, thanks.
Okay. And then, by the way, it's flattering to be called John Fauché. Just a second question related to the refranchising, and just doing some quick math. I guess one question in terms of trying to apply the financial impact over the total refranchising. So over the next couple of years, is it fair to use the impact per unit case that you're applying to 2015? Can we apply that to the total 1.2 billion cases that you're expected to refranchise over the next couple of years?
Yeah, so we calculated a kind of an average number over the time period. So yeah, it's fair to use that as an average.
Okay. So I guess if you go through that, the math ends up being over the full time frame about $600 million of EBIT profit before taxes that goes off into goes off to the franchisees, and then you recoup half of that. So the net impact is about $300 million.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Brian, just one point of clarification. I mean, depending on the timing of how the territories move, that 50 cents is going to swing from, you know, may swing up and down, but that's probably the right way to think about it on a longer term basis.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
Next question will come from Steve Powers with UBS. Your line is now open.
Yes, thanks. I think you said it, and I might have missed it, Kathy. The sub-bottling payments that you'll record going forward post the refranchising, will that be recorded in OI, or will that be recorded somewhere below the OI line?
So because of the accounting treatment, it's split between revenue and interest income because of the accounting treatment. And over time, it all flows into net revenue, but that initially it starts with a split between those two line items.
So some of it will end up being in the operating income and some of it will be below?
Oh, that's right.
Okay. Is there any heuristic, you know, 50-50, 70-30?
I think of it more as 50-50 was probably fair at this point.
Okay.
And then it moves over time into all eventually end up in net revenue over time.
Okay, great. And then the roughly $300 million of incremental media investment for 15, is that at all a tick down from what you had assumed back in the early part of 14, looking at 15? Has anything been cut back or pushed out in time, or is that always been the number that you've been working towards?
That's basically roughly been the number we've been working towards. There's nothing that's been clicked down or pushed out at this point.
Okay. Great. And I guess just one last question, if I could. On slide 10, when you walk through the different elements of specifically the COGS savings looking ahead, is there any rough rank ordering of size between those various line items, between the inline blowing and the network optimization? Are they roughly equal size buckets, or do one or two of them disproportionately drive the number?
No, we're not giving any specific guidance around that, so I can't tell you anything about that.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question will come from Judy Hong with Goldman Sachs. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Hi, Kathy. So I had a few questions. First, just on the FX, can you just update us on your hedged position? And, you know, obviously currencies like rubles are just moving around all over the place. So just where are you hedged, and, you know, just any color on other currencies that are so volatile right now?
So, yeah, we hedge our major currencies. But what's continuing to still be volatile, obviously, are the emerging market currencies, which you really can't hedge. It's really the cost prohibitive, really, to hedge significantly. So we are hedged for our major markets, and we will obviously update our guidance because it's still a very volatile environment out there right now. Things have, you know, in the last 6 weeks have changed significantly from the guidance we gave you back in October. So we will update you further in February, but we do have hedges on for, you know, like the yen, the euro, for our major markets, sterling, et cetera.
Okay. And then, Kathy, you talked about the fourth quarter sort of, you know, volume expectations and that not being very different from what we saw in third quarter. I guess for 2015, you kind of talked about the EPS constant currency growth being also very similar to 2014. Just wanted to understand your expectation from a top-line perspective. You know, is it sort of similar top-line, low single digits, and then you do have some savings coming through from productivity net of marketing investment. So how does sort of top line versus operating income expectations kind of fall out?
So for the next year, so obviously we are doing a lot of things to get back to the growth trajectory that we gave you on the external targets, the mid-single digits. So for 2015, as we are working our way through those things, we still are going to be in a very challenging macro environment. So we believe there are going to be some things that are going to be positive, are going to benefit for some things like cycling the challenges we had in Mexico. And, you know, some of our investments will start to pay off in the back half. So the back half may be better than the way the year starts off in the first half. And we will obviously be very focused on driving all of our productivity initiatives through. So basically what we've said is the 2015 is going to be a year of transition. It's still going to be a challenging year. And as we work our way back to long-term, you know, mid-single-digit revenue growth.
Okay, and then my last question is just on free cash flow outlook for 2015 and your $2 to $3 billion share buyback guidance. So anything to sort of, you know, call out in terms of what could impact free cash flow numbers for next year beyond just sort of, you know, currency translation, and I think you did call out pension, but just anything to call out there. And then how are you thinking about the $2 to $3 billion share buyback, which, you know, I think is a little bit lower than this year's outlook?
So the timing of any of these of our transactions closing obviously will have an impact on cash flow. But and then any other things that we decide we're going to do, any other M&A, will impact cash flow. You know, we say basically for share repurchase that you know, we invest back in the business first, and then we obviously pay dividend, and then we use share repurchase with basically what falls out. So share repurchase this year, we guided you to 2.5 billion shares, and so next year we're saying that the range we gave you was 2 to 3 billion. So we're basically in that same ballpark as we are for this year. And, you know, we have to see basically how things, how what M&A transactions, et cetera, we have for next year. The productivity costs will also impact our cash flow. Your productivity costs, they're a significant cost, one to one, basically, one to one and a half costs to get the productivity. So all of those things will have a will be a factor towards our productivity, towards our cash flow.
Okay, thank you.
Reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1. Our next question will come from Ali Dibach. Your line is now open.
Hey, guys. First question is around the Monster detail that you provided. Can you give us a sense of what assumptions you're making around Monster to give us that update? So what are you assuming in terms of expanded distribution? What are you assuming in terms of what comes in-house and what time frame? Can you give us a better sense of what estimates you're using to come up with some of this?
Well, we're expecting the transaction will close by the end of the first quarter. Obviously, that as the distribution transfers over, that is not us. That will be Monster that will that manages that. So we believe that it will be slightly accretive to EPS in 2015. There will be the brand swaps that will basically have a neutral impact at the net revenue line, and we will pick up some additional equity income, and all that obviously is depending upon the timing of when the transaction will close. So net of the transaction, so it's slightly negative on the gross profit, and it's slightly positive at PBT based upon the equity income that we think we will get, but that, again, is based upon the timing of the closing of the transaction.
So I guess let me ask it differently. What are you assuming about the Monster business itself in these numbers, if at all?
I can't talk about the assumptions that we've made about the Monster business itself. I mean, that would be obviously disclosing information about another public company. So we are not prepared to talk about that.
Okay. If you go to your page 26, which has kind of an overall summary breakdown, is this a page we should exactly kind of the left hand of this page keep seeing every quarter? Is that what you're suggesting? We'll literally see this every quarter, and you'll give us a sense of it very specifically at these metrics.
That's right. That's the scorecard that we agreed that we would continue to show you every quarter, and then an update on the actions that we will, the specific actions that we're taking. So the five actions that we're taking, we'll update you on those specific actions and how we're doing.
Okay, that's great. And then maybe two other ones if I could just squeeze in. One is around kind of the long-term, I guess, hope message that you left us with in the presentation around kind of returning to long-term growth. Can you just give us a sense of, I guess, how much of that is because of the actions you're suggesting you're taking versus how much of that is from kind of the macro environment getting better?
We do assume that there will be changes in the macro environment, that it will improve. We saw a slowdown in not only personal consumption expenditure growth, but that correlates with our industry growth, and so we did see a slowdown. So we are assuming that over time we will see that improve. So that's kind of the external factor. The internal factor, which we are focused very, very focused on, is the five actions that we talked about, and the things that we can control are the five actions that we talked about. And we are very focused on driving towards those actions, and we believe those five actions will drive us back to growth.
So what do you need to get from the macro environment from a growth perspective to get to your long-term targets?
We said it had slowed down a couple of points, so growth won't be dramatic, but it will over time, 18 months, 24 months, get back to its normal level of, I think in value it's 5-6%, and volume is like 3-4% for the macro environment.
So return to history. Okay. And then the last thing I had was around the helpful description that you've laid out of between now and 2017 for the North America refranchising of the distribution system. How would this look? Can you help us think through, perhaps even on a longer-term basis, how this would look if you start thinking about the manufacturing assets in North America as well, being either refranchised or JV'd out there or kind of set up as a third layer? What type of thought process should we have about that if we do want to think a little bit longer-term as well?
So for the manufacturing assets, at this point, what's very important is this the governance system structure that we put around the manufacturing assets. So we are focused on making them as efficient as possible and making them competitively advantaged. And then this, we've been talking about this one single governance structure that we are putting in place. Right now we are continuing to hold the manufacturing assets but under this governance structure. And then we are obviously exploring what we want to do long term and potential ownership models going forward.
Okay, but not more detail than that at this point.
Not at this point.
Okay, thanks very much.
Our next question will come from Mark Swartzberg with Stifel Nicolaus. Your line is now open.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Kathy, Tim. Kathy, two questions on North America refranchising. The first one is the estimated $3.4 billion in intangibles. Can you speak to timing of that write-off? Is that something you expect at the end of this year? Does it get phased in as the refranchising occurs? And then I had a follow-up on this estimated end-state economic impact.
So the intangibles, as we announced the territory transfers, with that territory transfer, we write off any intangibles that relate to that specific territory.
Got it. Great. And then on the estimated end state economic impact, I didn't follow why this 20 to 30 cents, which you're describing as temporary residual, I think it's over as much as 12 to 36 months.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you think that number ultimately goes away?
Or am I not, well, it does not ultimately go away. What I was trying to say was that it's the timing of when it goes away. So it doesn't go away initially. The costs are because we have regions and these territories are being transferred and some associates are going with the territory transfers, but if all of the associates in that particular region that supply a particular territory aren't moving right away, we either have to do the work to transfer additional territory so that they don't need to stay there and work that region and they can move with the territories, or we have to work over time to eliminate costs. That's why it takes a while, because as territories transfer, they are not all transferring at the same time. So the residual costs do go away over time.
So is it fair to understand that what you're calling this estimated end state is before that, that period where you get past bearing those residual costs?
The end state is after so it started out at 50 cents, and then the end state was when we got the other residual costs out of the system.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. Thanks, Kathy.
Okay.
Our next question will come from Dara Mohsenian with Morgan Stanley. Your line is now open.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hello.
So, Kathy, first just a detailed question. How much of the 2015 EPS impact from currency is being offset by hedging? So, in other words, if rates stay the same, how much leftover EPS impact can we expect in 2016 from the hedging that's in place for 2015?
So the 5 to 6% that maybe a point or two gets offset based on the hedging, but there still is a currency impact of at least 5% if rates were to stay exactly the same today.
Okay. And then more of a conceptual question. Obviously, the bottling business is going to be refranchised in a different manner than it was purchased if you keep the manufacturing and given the sub-bottling agreements. But I'm just trying to get a sense of, on a like-for-like basis, as you look at the value you're expecting to recapture on the initial investment you made when you purchase CC's U.S. business, if you're looking at it on a dollar basis, after you net together all these different impacts from the refranchising and the value, do you expect it to be below where you initially purchased the CCE business at? Is it far below? Is it close to the initial investment from a dollar basis? Again, just trying to get a sense of the ultimate ROI you're expecting on what was a pretty significant capital investment.
Right. So it's actually very similar to our initial investment. So the CCE deal itself was about $12 billion. If you take the cross-licensed brands, the Dr. Pepper brands, that adds another billion, so let's say $13 billion. At the end of 2017, about $5 billion will be off of our books. $5 billion in assets will be off of our books. When we finish refranchising, double that, because that $5 billion relates to about half of the U.S. volume. So about $10 billion will be off the books when we have divested everything. And then if you take the production assets, which is about another $2 billion, you're in the $12 billion range. And then you've got a remaining $1 billion, which we intend to recover through various means, including, efficiency over time.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay.
Our next question will come from Amit Sharma with BMO. Your line is now open.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, Kathy, we didn't talk about any acquisition and M&A activity for next year. Is it fair to assume that all these moving parts will mean that you'll probably concentrate on the business rather than looking for adding either new equity participation or outright M&A?
We did not talk about specific M&A activity. I don't think necessarily you can draw a conclusion about what we may or may not do in M&A based upon these moving parts. Obviously there's a lot going on, and we've got a lot to do. But we continue to look at M&A opportunities opportunistically, and we will do what we need to do to drive the business forward and to continue to grow the business. So it yet to be seen what we will do.
And just as a follow-up to early question by Monster, in the slightly accretive estimate that you gave, are you assuming any international distribution coming your way this year in 2015 or not?
So that will be captured market by market and over time. So we have factored in some international distribution, but that will continue to grow. There are markets that we are in, obviously, that Monster is not in, and that obviously takes time to get into some of those markets. So it will grow over time. So it'll start small, and then it will continue to grow.
And finally, you said commodity will be a slight headwind in 2015. Did I hear that right?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you.
Welcome.
Our next question will come from Vivien Azer with Cowen and Company. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you. My first question has to do with the unit case volume outlook for the fourth quarter being roughly in line with 3Q. That comes despite some improvement that we're seeing in North America. So are there any markets that you can call out where we should expect to see a deterioration?
We've continued to have challenges in several of our markets. Several of our Latin markets are having, like Brazil, their macroeconomic challenges in Brazil, their challenges in China. You go around the world, there are those are pretty significant markets for us, and they are having some challenges in the fourth quarter, as they did earlier in the year. So basically, in line with the third quarter, the same types of issues are continuing, the same trends are continuing. And so we anticipate that's why we gave you the guidance that we would be in line with the third quarter.
That's very helpful. And my second question has to do with the outlook for share buybacks as it relates to your currency outlook. Are there any currencies that if they moved away from you or against you in a disproportionate way that would have an outsized impact on your ability to buy back stock?
I don't look at it that way. So I look at what else I'm doing with the cash, as the net impacts more so anything else, my ability to buy back the shares. So it basically will depend upon, the investments in the business and any M&A activity, which we really haven't talked about any M&A activity going forward for 2015. So I, basically it will not as much be dependent on, you know, currency going for or against us.
Very helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay.
Operator.
I will now turn the conference back to you for closing remarks.
Thank you. So we are taking aggressive steps against our five strategic actions to regain our momentum. And so we are moving quickly to streamline our operations and further align our incentives to drive revenue growth while simultaneously driving cost out of our business through an aggressive productivity plan. So we see 2015 as a transition year as we reinvest in our business and we implement change to drive future growth. Now, while the short-term macroeconomic environment remains challenging, we are confident in our ability to return to sustainable growth as the long-term dynamics of our industry remain promising. Our brands and our global system are unparalleled, and we are fully dedicated to strengthening our position as the world's leading beverage company. As always, we thank you for your interest in our company, and we thank you for joining us this afternoon.
That will conclude today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.